From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, October 20th, 2017. And on this day, a legislative panel has come up with a compromise to deal with problems in Maine's new food sovereignty law. And a former state prosecutor was back in court today defending the work she did in a murder case 25 years ago. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The former state prosecutor who won a murder conviction against Anthony Sanborn 25 years ago was in court today to defend her work. Pam Ains denied wrongdoing in the decades-old case that is now the subject of a hearing that could set Sanborn free, Patty White reports.
After Anthony Sanborn was convicted of murdering teenager Jessica Briggs, the lead prosecutor in the case, former Assistant Attorney General Pam Ames, held a post-trial conference. The purpose, Ames said on the witness stand in court on Friday, was to identify problems during the trial. Sanborn's attorney, Amy Fairfield, zeroed in on the meeting's notes that refer to cross-checking alternative suspects and alibis.
Is it fair to say that cross-checking alibis for alternative suspects was a concern that people in that room had?
It is not.
Asked to clarify, Ames explained that more diligent checking on alibis was needed to better respond to alternative suspects presented by the defense. Ames remained firm on the integrity of her work throughout questioning, including when Fairfield asked about an alternative suspect that key witness Hope Cady mentioned to police. Cady, who testified in the original trial that she witnessed the murder, also told police about a man named Dusty, who assaulted her in the days following the crime.
An eyewitness in the case is telling the police about another suspect who's attacking her with a razor in the days after the homicide was committed. This person is coming forward. Is that something that you would want to know as a defense attorney?
After an objection and several clarifying questions, Ames answered,
I still don't see a connection between her being assaulted and her witnessing a homicide.
Sanborn's attorneys allege that Ames and two former Portland police detectives withheld evidence in the original trial that could have exonerated Sanborn. Sanborn has been out on bail since April when Hope Cady recanted her original testimony that she witnessed Sanborn commit the murder. The success of his post-conviction hearing and his potential freedom will come down to whether his attorneys can show that a new trial would likely result in a different verdict. The hearing began October 10th and is expected to run at least through the beginning of November. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Earlier this year, Governor Paula Page signed the Food Sovereignty Bill designed to establish local control over the private sale of food by farmers to consumers. But the U.S. Department of Agriculture says that would violate federal food safety laws, which require inspections of meat and poultry. The legislature's Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry Committee has come up with a compromise bill lawmakers will consider Monday. Mel Leary reports.
Supporters of the law, which takes effect November 1st, were surprised when the governor signed the bill. His own agriculture department had opposed the measure, and the issue is very controversial within the agriculture community, which doesn't like the proposal of federal food inspectors taking over inspections that the state has been doing for years. And that is exactly what the USDA plans to do if the state fails to change the law so that inspections continue. Lance Libby, a senior policy advisor to LePage, testified before the committee that a measure being proposed by the LePage administration satisfies federal concerns.
The bill before you today, the USDA has said in writing that this will fix the meat and poultry issue. So it's obviously up to the committee, you know, how you want to proceed.
But some in the agriculture community do not like the new law at all and want it repealed. Republican Representative Jeff Timberlake of Turner a lifelong farmer, says the feds will go after other food processors if the law stands.
And if you're a processor of food, this is having a huge bearing on what happens to you in the future. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture is not going to stop at meat and poultry.
That theme was repeated by several at the public hearing on the bill. There is a concern that other foodstuffs, such as seafood and dairy products, regulated by other federal agencies, will be next to face federal inspections because of the new Maine law. Julie Bickford, executive director of the Maine Dairy Industry Association, suggested that the committee use a draft prepared by Maine's Department of Agriculture.
We would advocate that a one-sentence fix that the department had previously discussed with USDA would be preferable.
The governor's bill runs 3 pages, and some are worried that in solving the meat and poultry inspection issue, it creates additional problems. State-inspected slaughterhouses have been increasing their output. Last year, production was up 42%, or nearly 1 million pounds of red meat. Several amendments to address other food processors have been drafted, but time is running out. Melvin Williams is a farmer from Waldoboro.
This meat and poultry needs to be fixed, and we got 10 days to do it. And you guys aren't going to work here 10 days. So I suggest you have something ready for Monday morning.
After over 2 hours of partisan caucuses, the committee voted unanimously to amend the governor's proposal to address the concerns raised at the public hearing. Some confusing language was removed and definitions added to address the concern about other processed food inspections being preempted by the federal government. It also limits the food sovereignty law to face-to-face transactions. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
In less than a month, voters in Lewiston and Auburn will decide on a proposal to merge the two cities. Signs that read "No Merger" and "1 LA" are springing up in neighborhoods on both sides of the Androscoggin River, which divides the two communities. Supporters of the merger say it would improve efficiency and spur economic development, but opponents are skeptical of the projected savings and raise fears of a logistical nightmare. Some also say it's a matter of preserving cultural identity. Abukar Adan has more.
It's a busy weekday afternoon at Simone's Hot Dog Stand, a popular gathering place in downtown Lewiston. Kevin Farah, who's grabbing a bite with a friend, says he hasn't really followed the merger issue all that closely.
I thought at first when I heard this that it was just sort of a gimmick to become the biggest city in the state.
But Farah, an Auburn resident who now lives in Lewiston, believes that the framers of the merger proposal have both cities' best interest in mind.
But I think the people that are doing it for good reasons. They're saying they can consolidate services and save money.
A Lewiston-Auburn Joint Charter Commission, made up of 6 elected residents, detailed how the merger would be done in a draft charter and a consolidation agreement. The services, budgets, and staffing of the Twin Cities would be consolidated into one over a 2-year transitional period. Police, fire, and public works departments would all be merged, and the largest school district in the state would be created. Merger advocates say these changes would help the cities operate more efficiently, saving between $2.3 to $4.2 million a year.
It's supposed to save a lot of money, but I find it hard that it will.
Rita Perot, a Lewiston native, says she's concerned about the hidden costs, logistical complications, and political tensions that might arise.
But I think they'd be too complicated merging the government part of it. They'll have to pick people. There'll be jobs lost on both sides, and I think that'll create more animosity than anything else. And they're going to still say, oh, well, they voted for somebody living in Auburn. Oh, they voted for somebody living in Lewiston.
The historical rivalry between Lewiston and Auburn goes much deeper than high school sports. It's based on class and cultural identity. Beginning in the 19th century, the blue-collar, mostly Franco-American workers lived in Lewiston, whereas the more affluent mill owners lived in Auburn. Lewiston has historically voted Democratic, and Auburn, Republican. and these issues continued to surface in the merger debate. But supporters of the merger, including Dennis Bergeon of Auburn, say it's time to move on.
I just think that's something that will diminish anyways. Whether you merge the cities or not, those cultures will change because the population base is changing. So I really can't support that. I just it's hard for me to understand that, where that's coming from. I just think that we will be melding no matter what.
And Peg Hoffman of Lewiston says the benefits of a unified community far outweigh the costs of a merger.
You really need that consistency. And when the politics are so fluctuating, it seems to me that those efforts, they don't go so well. And I think it must be very frustrating to people who have invested years in laying those foundations and building on them to see it go away because the personalities change. That does not serve either of our cities very well.
But Auburn's Alan Whitman says the entire idea of the merger is based on a false premise that a larger unified city is somehow better.
So why are we trying to create something here that it's not? We should be celebrating what we are, a rural place. I know what big city living is, and I can honestly tell you, I have no interest in waiting in front of a stoplight and watching it change 7 times before I get through it.
If the vote passes next month, this would be the first such merger in Maine since Dover joined with Foxcroft in 1922. Lewiston and Auburn have considered and rejected proposals to merge over the past few decades. Rita Perot says even though she's against the proposal, she'll live with the outcome.
And whatever people choose is the way it should go, and then you just gotta live with it and hope for the best.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Abukar Adan.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, October 20th, 2017. Thanks to Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.